This is a follow-up to people that are working on this page and trying to make sense of it. If some of it seems a bit complicated, it's because it is. This is the result of decades of pretty high-level research on the part of one of the best researchers and scientists in the field. So the idea that it could all be explained instantly and easily is overly optimistic, right? But you can still get some good information from it. So I want to give some background that it will help shed some light on all this for people that want to get deeper into this. And we'll start with this. There's a big difference between reptiles and mammals, and we are mammals. And if we look at how reptiles live, number one, they lay eggs. They may take care of their eggs, but generally they don't. They just sort of lay them and leave. They certainly don't take care of what hatches from the eggs. They don't hang out with them. They don't play with them. They don't teach them. There's not much of an evolutionary progression on the part of reptiles. They kind of are born ready to go. They get bigger. Maybe they develop some experience, but they're pretty unidimensional. When it's cold, they just stop moving because they can't do anything else. They don't really have much internal heat. And that's the life of a reptile. Mammals are completely different. They carry their young in gestation. When their young are born, even if they are little horses and can stand up, they need a lot of care and protection and education, training, development after they're born. Nowhere is this more clear than in the human being. It's a very, 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 very long process. The other difference between mammals and reptiles is mammals like to hang out together, do things together. Reptiles, not so much. So that's a very important distinction. So we are mammals, not reptiles. Now let's switch to another topic, the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is one of 12 cranial nerves in the body. So you know you have a brain. Everybody knows that. You know you have a spinal cord. You know you have nerves that run from the spinal cord to your arms, your legs, and so on. If you've ever been to a chiropractor's office, you know, they'll show you that. But you also have cranial nerves, and these are special purpose nerves, pretty high powered, pretty important. For instance, you have the olfactory nerve. That's the nerve that lets you smell, dedicated to that one thing. And it's in the cranium. It's in the brain. You know, it's right there in the brain stem and the brain itself. That's the cranial nerve. You have the optic nerve. That's a cranial nerve. And then, because vision is so important, you have a couple of sets of cranial nerves that do nothing else but let your eyes look up, down, left, right, and all around. But then you have this vagus nerve, which is a very, and this is one of the bedrocks of Stephen's study. It is a multipurpose nerve, cranial nerve, and it leaves the cranium and the brain stem and goes to the heart and goes to the lungs and goes to the liver and the intestine and all kinds of places this vagus nerve goes. It comes from the Latin word to wander. All right, so that's the next piece you need to know. So we're not reptiles, we're mammals. Mammals have certain characteristics. We have these cranial nerves, and one of the most interesting and multipurpose ones is the vagus nerve. Mammals have two different kinds of vagus nerves. We have an advanced vagus nerve in addition to a primitive one. So we share a vagus nerve that the reptiles have, but we have an extra vagus nerve that has special functions, which I'm going to get to in a second. So we got those two things nailed down. Now we've got the autonomic nervous system, which could more easily be called the automatic nervous system. When you reach out to pick up a cup of coffee or shake somebody's hand, that's pretty intentional. So that's not automatic. But you do have an automatic nervous system, which regulates your breathing, regulates your digestion, regulates your blood pressure, and it pretty much operates on its own. And it has different modes. One of the modes we've all heard of is fight or flight, you know, the agitated, active mode. Another one is rest and digest. That's the relaxation response. There's another one that's very rarely talked about, but is absolutely in there, and it is the freeze. It's something that we share with reptiles. And that is one of the autonomic nervous system's response to the world. If, you know, you're attacked and you have no way to fight back, one of the things that the autonomic nervous system does is shut you down. Might seem to be counterproductive, but there are certain predatory animals that don't like to eat things. They like to, you know, sink their teeth into something alive. So if you can play dead really well, if your autonomic nervous system can play dead really well, you might have a chance of surviving. So that's one reason we have the shutdown mode. The other reason is reptiles, when it gets cold, they really need to shut down because they can't do anything. So useful mode for that. Deep sea diving, which certain reptiles do. When you're going to be underwater for a long, long time, you want to diminish your need for oxygen. Now, mammals can't really do that safely. We've always got to have a stream of oxygen coming in. So what is Stevens' polyvagal theory? Well, it's basically this. We are mammals. We have this advanced vagal nerve in addition to the primitive ones that we share with the reptiles. And that one is all about communication, what he calls social engagement. And this branch of the vagal nerve, this advanced one, does interesting things. And he talked about it in the interview. It innervates the muscles of the face. It changes your hearing. It allows you to hear voices and within a certain, hear sounds better within a certain pitch. Your breathing, he talked about this, can help regulate your heart and make you calm. So we've got this neural apparatus. It's a mode. See, the nerve system's one piece. It can just go into different modes. So it can go into fight and flight. It can go into rest and digest. It can go into freeze, or it can go into social engagement. And social engagement, as we know, involves eye contact, involves facial expression, involves tone of voice. And when we're in social engagement, we feel the only way, and here's the key, the only way to activate the social engagement mode, which is how we bond with other people, how we get educated, is when the nervous system feels safe. Okay. So a person who does not feel safe physically, neurologically, does not engage socially. That makes sense, right? I mean, the most dramatic example would be someone who's autistic. And interestingly enough, and I have experience with this because I've worked with people in this field, someone who has been in that mode for a long time can be taken out of that mode into a social engagement mode simply by doing things that are specifically designed to make that person feel neurologically safe. So that social engagement mode cannot turn on unless someone feels safe. So let's look at music. What does music do? Music involves facial expression. It involves looking at other people. It involves listening intensely. It involves doing things with people. There's this other interesting dimension to the polyvagal theory, which says, there's nothing wrong with the flight or fight response. That is actually an activated response. Your energy is coursing through your body to do something. And if you can have that state while simultaneously feeling safe, now you're in a social engagement state. So play, like sports, for example. People are running around, leaping, banging into each other, doing all kinds of wild stuff. But they're not terrorized. They're not terrified. They're activated. Their vagus nerve has activated all their breathing and their heartbeat and so on. But because they're in a safe environment, because there are rules, because there's a referee, because, they know it's a game ultimately, people are not, feeling that they're in terror. So games or sports are a great way. Just game playing. Everybody knows how children love to play the game where you chase them around the room and pretend you're a monster. And they know you're not a monster. And that's so they can experience this activation of the flight or fright response in a safe setting, which makes it fun as opposed to terrifying. Now let's look at music. You're certainly activated when you're playing or listening to music. In most societies, we sort of fell away from this in the 20th century, but most societies, music equals dance. There's no such thing as somebody playing music without somebody dancing. And that was even true in jazz up until the 60s or the 50s. So dancing, heartbeat, rapid breathing, fight and flight response is being activated, but it's a safe environment and you're engaging, you're involved in social engagement with your partner. So this is a way that you can go through that activated neurophysiological state and have fun and bond with people and learn things and free your mind. Because, and this is where I think I'm going to leave this off, we have all kinds of higher mental processing, right? Can't function if we don't feel safe. So social engagement is not only, we always talk about socializing children. They already know how. We just have to teach them certain social niceties. But the socializing is really important because it contributes to a feeling of feeling safe And once you're in feeling safe, that's when the higher mental processes can kick in and start functioning. So long story short, music and dance and sports and play and all the things that we're taking out of school are really undermining our children dramatically, right? Because they're not getting to experience that feeling of being active and feeling safe at the same time. And that's a very, very important lesson, because that's where creativity comes from. That's where insight comes from. That's where, and not just creativity in music, but creativity in science, in medicine, and any field, right? You've got to feel active. You've got to be active, engaged, and you have to feel safe. And so that's one of the things, besides the aesthetic wonders of music, that's one of the things that children can learn and develop through the study and practice of music.